This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
And welcome to the People Speak Radio. This is your host, David Swanson, and we are privileged to have with us as a guest for the next hour, taking questions from me and from you. You can call in and join us, Mary Pallant, who is a Democratic candidate for Congress from California's 24th District, which is a beautiful place itself, and she can tell us about it. You can get in on this conversation during the next hour by calling toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, 888-228-4494. That's 888-228-4494. Or anywhere else in the world, 877-489-6350. Or you can send us questions through the chat room at thepeoplespeakradio.net. And again, our guest is future Congresswoman Mary Pallant. Welcome to the program, Mary.
Thank you, David. Thank you for having me. And just for the listeners, if they're not familiar with the 24th in California, I always like to let people know where it's located. It's most of Ventura County, which is the county that borders Los Angeles County. And then it has a huge portion of Santa Barbara County as well, just to the north of Ventura County. So it's quite a large district. It's about 150 miles long, and quite a diverse population, as well as some urban areas and rural areas mixed in the whole entire area.
And so it's along the coast, and it's north of LA, and it's beautiful. And and I saw you out there at a beautiful little town called Ojai, where I spoke at an event. So why are you running for Congress there? What's the matter with Congressman Elton Gallagher, the Republican incumbent? Is he not representing the people?
Yeah, he's been rubber stamping pretty much everything that Bush has put through, and he hasn't really been instrumental in doing what's best for the people of not only the country but of the district. And he works really hard to keep the district off the map, because I think he likes to just roll through every 2 years and kind of go unnoticed. And it's really time that this district gets on the map, and I'm driven to be a voice and a very strong voice for this district. And as far as Elton's policies with the Iraq war, with health care, with the environment, all of the issues that are really imperative and fundamental today to changing the direction that we need to go, he has been representing in the opposite direction, just standing on the right side of Bush. And so it's time for a new direction, as I say in my campaign slogan and my website, that it's time for him to retire. He's been here since 1986, and since it's such a really strong year for Democrats, it looks like it's really going to be a very good year all across the nation, from what we've seen on a couple of the special elections with Republicans districts, or districts that are considered more leaning toward a Republican stronghold. And so it's very exciting. We're getting very excited out here, and our county, Ventura County, has recently turned blue, and the district itself, the registration between the Democrats and the Republicans, has shrunk from about 10% down to about an 8% difference.
It is very exciting, and I think all of the special elections that we've seen have gone to the Democrat, even in heavily Republican districts, and we're now seeing possibilities opening up where really progressive Democrats are looking like they may have a chance and may have flown in under the radar of the Democratic leaders in Congress who weren't paying attention to Republican-leaning districts.
Yes.
But in your district, there's going to be a primary, correct?
Yes, there is. I have a primary coming June 3rd. There's June 3rd. Two other women that are on the ballots. There's three women. But I feel like I'm really the strongest candidate to go up and face Elton. One of the women had previously challenged him in 2006, and she was only able to get about 37% of the vote, when the district really should have been, it was 44 to 55% at that time, and she really should have pulled in at least 44 to 45% of the vote because it was a very strong Democratic year because the Iraq occupation was a big issue in 2006. And, you know, she had her shot, and she wasn't able to pull through like we were all hoping. And so I decided that I'm going to run. I said, this is a good year. And with all of my past experience in running a business for 10 years, and I have a master's in psychology, and I've been very active and instrumental in local politics from the grassroots level since 2000, that all of that combined shows that I really have a strong history of what is needed to engage the people, to formulate good ideas and policies for good schools, good jobs, safe communities. And it's time for a new direction, like I say, and it's really looking really good here. My primary is looking really good. The calling that we're doing is showing very favorably toward me, and the numbers are looking like I'm going to pull through the primary. And it's very exciting because I really feel like I can go on and challenge Elton, because you mentioned progressive candidates, and I'm running as a progressive Democrat. And the reason that I stand very firm and very proud with that is because I believe fundamentally that the Democratic Party has to get back to their base, which is at the root is progressive politics. It's about ensuring democracy. It's about ensuring the balance of power. And it's about providing opportunity for all and not the well-connected few. And so I talk about that over and over as I'm out on the campaign trail, and getting back to fundamentally what is American. And if you look at even our Bill of Rights, our Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, not only are those fundamental American documents, but they're progressive documents. And for Democrats to win, we really have to get back to what does it mean to be a Democrat. And to be a Democrat really embraces all of the ideals and principles and values in what it means to be a progressive Democrat.
Well, it certainly seems like you're getting that message across. I'm looking at your website, which people can go to at marypallant.com. That's MaryPallant.com. And you seem to have piled up the endorsements. You have endorsements from Progressive Democrats of America nationally, and a number of local chapters, from the California Labor Federation, from the California Nurses Association, from the UAW, from the Cal State University Political Action Committee. I'm not sure what that is. And your campaign seems to be moving. In terms of the issues that people are talking about in your district, you've got four things listed on your website: the economy, Iraq, the environment, and healthcare. Let's look a little bit at each of those. What would you do on the economy that's not being done now in Washington, and that the other candidates are not proposing?
Well, one of the big issues that we really need to tie in is the exorbitant cost of the Iraq occupation, and how it's now reaching almost $3 trillion for the total cost, not only for what we've spent, but what the cost is going to be implemented in the future as far as taking care of what needed to be restored in our armed forces and medical services, et cetera. And so what I do is I work on tying in that occupation with the economy, and that it's had an impact on what we're feeling here locally, as well as nationally. And when you look at the cost of the Iraq occupation and say that, you know, we need to withdraw without delay, we need to engage the surrounding countries in the peace process for stability in the region, and it has to be a diplomatic and political solution in order to fix what's going on there. It's not a military solution, and so that's really an imperative issue why we need to have our military withdrawn, and also the private contractors as well. But then tie that money back into our home economy and reinvest the money here for jobs and schools and infrastructure.
And I think you're exactly right that these are not separate issues, the war and the economy. But I've interviewed some candidates who are progressive Democrats who have that same position and say we must bring the troops home quickly. But they intend to make that as a recommendation to the next president as a Congress member, not to actually act as a Congress member by cutting off the funding.
I would vote against funding. Barbara Lee, who's been instrumental here in California, her district is up in Northern California, has been instrumental in not funding this occupation, and saying that we only need to vote for funding that's going to bring our troops home. And that's what we should be doing. We should be looking at the funding to bring the troops home, to bring the contractors home, to bring the support troops home, not just the combat. And it has to be a vote and a voice to stop the funding, because that's how we're going to send the message that we have to get out. If we keep voting for the funding, then it's sending a mixed message. Well, we sent a mandate in 2006 for Democrats to get us out of Iraq, and yet they haven't abided by that, and they continue to fund. And so it's sending the wrong message. So what I can be, and what Elton Gallagher is not, is a very strong voice and a vote for stopping funding of this occupation, and to go in and join with other like-minded congressional representatives like Barbara Lee, Lynn Woosley, Maxine Waters, and join the Out of Iraq Caucus, and join with them and help in solidarity, because when we stand together, we're going to stand stronger.
Sounds right to me. So, as you know, last week they did not allow Barbara Lee to have a vote on her amendment to fund just a withdrawal. So they ended up having to vote simply yes or no on funding the continued occupation. And 147 Democrats and 2 Republicans voted no. I take it we would have had another vote in that column if you'd been there.
Yes, we would have.
Yeah. Because that's a position that that not all Democrats are taking, and not all somewhat progressive candidates are taking. So it's refreshing to hear. As you know, there was also a vote on a separate amendment to fund veterans care and fund unemployment insurance, things which are arguably we would need less if we weren't funding this disastrous war. But those are in an amendment that makes no sense unless it's attached to this war money. It's all one package. And so my senator here in Virginia, Jim Webb, is very aggressively pushing this veterans care, and yet he insists on funding this creation of thousands of additional injured veterans in order to attach that veterans care to the war money. That's an approach I personally am opposed to. I would love to see veterans care proposed as a separate bill.
Yes,
but writing it along with the war money doesn't make any sense to me. So I guess the question is, what could they attach to the war funding that would get you to vote for it?
Well, they couldn't, you know, and that's one of the issues. And it's like, even if they go in and attach education, if we needed funding for education or if we needed funding for infrastructure, see, that's the issue that we have to address, and this is something that I've talked about on the campaign trail, is I would love to see, when we're voting on a bill, why is it that they have to throw in veteran care with the Iraq funding, or, you know, education with the funding the Iraq occupation? Why can't we just vote one item at a time? Why is it that they sneak in all of these amendments? Why is it that there's other issues that are always seem to be tagged on to some of these appropriations or supplemental funding bills? And I would really like to start fighting with and standing up with other representatives who see if we can change the system to where when you're voting on an issue, you're voting on that particular issue.
Because
that really seems to be something that needs to be reformed within the House of Representatives and the Senate.
I couldn't agree more, and I'm guessing that a lot of people feel the same. And if you're listening and want to get in on this conversation, we're speaking with a congressional candidate from California's 24th District, Mary Pallant, and you can call in at toll-free 888-228-4494, 888-228-4494, or outside the U.S. and Canada, 877-489-6350. Or go to the peoplespeakradio.net and send in your questions. We actually have a caller from the beautiful little town I mentioned earlier where I saw you at an event, Mary, in Ojai.
Mm-hmm.
We have
Kathleen
from Ojai on the line. Kathleen, thanks for calling the People Speak Radio.
Oh, thank you for having this interview, and hi to both of you. I met you both at that event. Mary, I've noticed that whenever a candidate advocates withdrawing from Iraq, everyone becomes concerned about what's going to happen when we leave. And I was wondering if you would advocate replacing our troops with UN peacekeeping troops and reallocating funding from wartime funding to peacekeeping funding. Is that something you think would be advisable?
Well, yeah, when we withdraw from Iraq, we can't just leave a vacuum there. And what we really, because in Iraq, really, it's not a military solution anyway. It's a security solution and it's a police solution. The Iraqi people need to restore their police forces in order to restore all of the violence that's been going on in the areas that we're not even associated with. And we've seen that when we turn areas like the El Anbar province back over to the Iraqis, who know better their areas and the people, and that's where we've seen the violence go down. And we've also seen the violence go down in areas where we've hired a lot of security forces. And so they used to be prior insurgents or prior Al-Qaeda and Iraq members, and they're now working as a security force member. And the reason that the violence is going down, not only because we're hiring them, but also because they have jobs and they're able to get a paycheck and feed their families. And so that's been instrumental in helping some of the violence in some of the areas. And so, yes, absolutely, if the UN, it has to be a worldwide Middle Eastern solution. It cannot just be a unilateral solution from the United States, just as the invasion was a unilateral solution invasion. We need to engage the world in helping with this. I know it's our mess, and so it's our responsibility to fund it as well for the cleanup, but also I want the funding to go to the Iraqis to rebuild. I don't want Halliburton or Bechtel or any of these other companies to go in and do the rebuilding. I want the Iraqis first and foremost to have the first dibs at going in and rebuilding and reconstructing their own country so that they can make money off of rebuilding it and get some income coming in so that they can support and feed their families, so that we can then get a lot of the refugees who have left the country and have fled to Syria and other surrounding countries, that we can give them an incentive to come back in, especially the teachers, the doctors, the dentists, and all of the large portion of the middle class. And absolutely, I think we really need to start looking also, too, and the other part of your question regarding maybe perhaps a Department of Peace, start shifting our ideology away from a Department of War and Destruction toward peace. Then we can look at peace as being profitable, too. Like, imagine if we went in and fighting terrorism, because imagine if we went into Afghanistan with all of the technology we have, say, here in California for building buildings that are earthquake-proof. Say that we took companies and we had them go into Afghanistan and we helped subsidize that and we teach them and we build buildings that show how to sustain large-scale earthquakes. Imagine what that would do not only to our the vision of that people see of us, you know, and how they view us. Imagine what it would do to help also to the youth who are being brought up in such a violent and destructive area to say, you know what, the United States is not the evil empire that everybody is trying to say we are. We can actually go in and actually do some good, and we can still make money if we do it in the right way.
It's amazing, Mary, to hear someone actually express concern for what Iraqis might think. You obviously haven't been breathing much Washington, D.C. air yet, and you mostly hear reference to Iraqis, even from progressives in Congress, as we need to start telling them we're going to get out in order to put pressure on the Iraqis, as if the Iraqis haven't wanted us to get out for years now. But I also like your idea on Afghanistan. We had on this program a few weeks ago a woman named Shirin Ebadi, who is a Nobel Peace Prize laureate from Iran, and she said that what she thinks the United States should have done after September 11th was go into Afghanistan and build a school named for each victim of the attack so that children learned about victims of violence, and
mm-hmm.
the U.S. was seen as actually providing something useful. A very different suggestion from what we did, of course. What do you make of that sort of idea?
Well, that's a fabulous idea too. And again, it gets back to the notion, instead of going in and destroying, we're going in and we're building and we're creating. You know, do we want to be a country that's known for its destruction and violence, or do we want to be known as a country who works on humanitarian issues? And at the same time, we can still make that profitable for any numerous amount of small companies who have the ideas and the technology, again, to build schools or, again, to build homes and have the technology to build homes that are earthquake-proof and help them and share that with the Afghani people. So absolutely, that's a great idea, and that's how, again, educating society, too, so that they're not ignorant to what is going on, because, you know, it's when people are ignorant and uneducated that they're easier to sway toward violence and destruction if they don't have an understanding. And we find that with numerous organizations. There's a local project here that the Rotary Club works with called Project Triumph, and they take Palestinian children, Israeli children, Jewish children, and Christians, and they take them and they work together for a few weeks and they learn about each other. And you know what they end up learning is that we're really not all that different.
Yeah, it's an important lesson and a hard one. We get questions sent in through a chat room, and here's one from Larry in Nebraska. Do you feel President Bush and Dick Cheney should be investigated for leading us into the Iraq War?
Well, absolutely. I've always thought that impeachment should never have been taken off the table, as Nancy Pelosi said. Perhaps she felt that there just wasn't going to be the votes. But that should always have been an option, because we have to look at that as not a political ordeal. It's not a partisan ordeal. It's a constitutional rule of law mandate. And for anybody to say that, I just felt like it kind of did a disservice to all of the people who have known what's been going on since the beginning of the occupation, that even before 9/11, that Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and Condi Rice were planning on how they could go in and invade Iraq. And so we have to look at all of that. But instead of getting, you know, I completely support impeachment. And unfortunately, what happened in with Clinton's case, it looks as if the Republicans wanted to politicize it, so that then they knew that the Democrats would be a little reticent or reluctant to go in and utilize that element of our constitutional powers, because then they would look partisan. And so I think that was one of the elements, if you go looking backwards. But, you know, if we can't impeach, we should at least have hearings. Like Congressman Wexler from Florida is trying to hold Conyers' feet to the fire, the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, to say, look, you know, we should at least have hearings. And also, too, there's nothing that should preclude any of this from being tried in a criminal court and let the evidence prevail.
Yeah, I Congressman Wexler and others are pushing for impeachment hearings, and there are past impeachments of judges, for example, that have taken literally a day. So having 8 months left, it's not over. But hypothetically, let's say we don't get impeachment, and it's January 2009, and you're in office. So there's the possibility still of that last month of impeaching them while they're still in office, or impeaching them after they're out of office, which is possible as well. Would either of those be things you would pursue? And then there's the question of what the new Justice Department would do if it actually reverts to being a Justice Department instead of a wing of the
and
Republican
uphold the rule
Party.
Of law. You mean that would be nice,
right, and
actually go out there and uphold all of those subpoenas, and yes,
yeah.
that would be a refreshing change, I think, for a Department of Justice to actually follow through with the rule of law. But impeachment would be, it's something that we always have to take a look at, especially because I believe our founding fathers, when they talked about high crimes and misdemeanors, this is something that they had in mind. It wasn't some sexual indiscretion where a president tried to keep that from the public. I don't think that's what they had in mind when they were discussing high crimes and misdemeanors. But there's also other issues that we have to look at as well, which is the over 700 signing statements that Bush has had, you know, the torture and rendition of citizens, you know, the spying on Americans that was happening prior to 9/11. There's so many other issues as well that we have to address. And also, too, hopefully somebody will take a look at trying to have them tried in a war crime. You know, when Rumsfeld was in France and the French had a warrant out for his arrest and he narrowly escaped.
Yes.
You know,
Germany
hopefully,
and some other countries too.
Yes, yes. Hopefully somebody out there will try that, because, you know, I believe that it should come to trial. You know, let the evidence speak for itself.
Well, I would love to see some other countries and international courts go after these people, but I'd really love it if our country could do it. And Senator Obama was asked in Philadelphia around the time of the Pennsylvania primaries, you know, would his Justice Department go after Bush and Cheney for their crimes? And you know, he didn't bring this up. He was asked by a questioner,
mm-hmm.
and he replied that he would, yes, he would immediately start an investigation to
yes.
look into this question of
yes.
whether...
And that's what we need to do. That's exactly what we need to do. We should at least have an investigation. We should at least have hearings to look into these matters. And, you know, I envision maybe somebody like John Edwards as our attorney general in the Obama cabinet. So, you know, hopefully
yeah.
then that would come to fruition and we would see investigations.
And you would urge them to pursue that?
Yes, absolutely.
Here's a related question that just came in this minute from Scott in Kansas City, Missouri. Who does Mary support for president and why?
Well,
you're running for the most important branch of our government, but everyone wants to ask about the second branch of our government, where all
yes.
the power is now. So.
Yes, yes. Well, yeah, that's the thing about being a progressive is ensuring the balance of power, and that's one issue that we have to get back to addressing, too, not only the signing statements and the torture and rendition and the spying on Americans, but the, you know, ensuring the balance of power, and that's why we have the three co-equal branches of government so that they could each keep an eye on each other and they could each challenge each other. And that's something that we've lost over these past several years. And also as well, the media, who the founding fathers looked upon as being the fourth estate. And they're just as responsible, I believe, over the last several years and what's been happening too, because they have not been doing the job that they should have been doing.
And so to answer Scott's question, are you supporting Senator Obama?
Yeah, I just recently endorsed Senator Barack Obama. I was a big supporter of Edwards, and I wanted to wait until we had a nominee, but I just prefer the direction that Obama wants to take the country. I am running on It's a New Direction also, and I believe that if we're going to have fundamental change in Washington, then we really need to have people who are going to step up to the plate and represent fundamental change, and I just don't know if Hillary Clinton would bring that. You know, I mean, I admire her. I think she's done a great job, and I think it's phenomenal that for the first time my two daughters, who are 14 and 10, have seen a woman who actually had a shot at becoming the President of the United States, and I think that's just absolutely phenomenal. But if you look at since 1980, we had Vice President Bush for 8 years. And then
yep.
we had President Bush for 4 years. And then we had President Clinton for 8 years. And then we've had George W. for the last 8 years. And then if we had Hillary Clinton, we'd have another Clinton for another 8 years. And we've had two families that have been running the country for over 30 years. And so I'd really like to see us have some real fundamental change and a new direction. And I think that calls for a fresh face, a fresh voice, and a fresh look at politics.
I certainly agree. Here's a question on a California topic for you that I know nothing about, and I don't know if you know, but this is
well,
Jack.
Hopefully I do.
You might. You live there. This is Jack in Oklahoma asking, does Mary feel that Governor Schwarzenegger's California Recovery Team organization should be investigated for its questionable tax-exempt status since it benefits individuals and a political party?
I don't know if he's talking about, there's a particular charity, I think, I don't know what the term is that they call it, that funds all of Arnold's hotel stay while he stays up in Sacramento, his traveling expenses and that kind of thing. I don't know if that's the organization that he's referring to or not.
It sounds like it might be, but I don't know the organization. So.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, with our campaign finance laws, it's not illegal what they're doing. You know, is it right? I don't believe so. And what that does is it just calls to question campaign finance reform in the true sense, not the campaign finance reform that we saw with McCain-Feingold. But we need real clean money. California has Prop 89 that went through in the 2006 election for California clean money. There's still a huge organization here called the California Clean Money Campaign that's working very hard on getting public financing for our candidates and office holders. And also there's another campaign, the Just $6 campaign, that's looking at public financing for federal candidates as well. So, you know, that's how we're going to really clean up a lot of the issues, not only in our state capitals, but in Washington, D.C. That's with public financing of elections.
It would be great to get that through in Washington as well, in Washington, D.C.
Candidates wouldn't have to dial for dollars 24 hours a day. They could go out and do what they're supposed to do, and that's be a representative and a voice for the people and their constituents.
Are you having to spend a lot of time raising money?
Well, you know, in this district, it's difficult to do that because of the past candidate's performance, and people have a tendency not to look at this district as something that we could actually win. So I have to spend probably five times as much time with one person as a normal candidate would, trying to convince them that, yes, you know, this district does have possibilities this year especially. But it does take up a portion of your time as a candidate. And then it also, when you actually get into office, then it takes up another huge portion of your time going out and raising money. So that's why I'm just a big, big supporter of public financing, because America should not be, bought and sold to the highest bidders.
But people who want to see a real progressive Democrat get into Congress from somewhere, anywhere, even if it's not where they live, such as in my district where we don't have that option, and see you replace a real Bush-Cheney loyalist Republican, can go to marypallant.com and go to put the cursor where it says action and click on contribute and put in some money. You don't have to live in the district, right?
Absolutely. You can live anywhere in the United States, and you have to be a legal resident or a citizen, and cannot take donations from corporations, but individuals we can. And the maximum limit per individual per election cycle is $2,300. But $50 helps, $25 helps, any little amount helps. I'm looking at doing some more mailings here at the end of the month. And so it helps me to get more strategic mailings out to the voters. So any amount is appreciated.
And it seems that Senator Obama's done quite well getting people to give $20, $50 a month, and again the next month and the next month, whereas Senator Clinton's contributors largely gave $2,300 a long time ago and then couldn't give any more. So,
yes.
So you can give some and then go back and give some more. There was another question that came in I wanted to ask. Mike in California asks whether you would support a fully independent, I'm not sure independent from what, but a fully independent investigation of 9/11.
Well, you know, I've been asked that a few times on the campaign trail, and what I support is what Scott Ritter supports, and that's to completely just disregard the previous 9/11 commission and install a real nonpartisan commission like the Warren Commission to really do some investigation, because there's just, you know, a lot of people feel there's just too many questions that have not gone answered, and we really need to have a true nonpartisan commission step up and investigate.
I agree. There was a lot of White House influence in the last one.
Yes, yes. It didn't seem non-biased at all.
We are going to have to get to a break shortly, but I want to bring in another caller, Steve from Santa Fe. Thanks for calling the People Speak Radio.
Thank you, David, and thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
I really like what I hear, and I would wish that there was more people like you in representing America. The question I've got, I think one of the major concerns of the world today, of course, has been made to be terrorism. And I'm wondering what your position would be on telling Israel that they have to disarm. And I'll listen in the chat room. Thank you.
Well, I don't know if Israel is a terrorist country. I wouldn't say that. But we have to engage everybody in the Middle East if we're going to be working seriously at combating and fighting terrorism. And, again, that kind of ties into our Iraq occupation, that going after any type of terrorist, it's not a military solution. It's an intelligence solution. You know, we need to have shared intelligence. You need the special ops to go in and find anybody who might wanting to be causing harm to this nation or any other nation. And it's really about engaging all the countries and sharing intelligence and information. And it's really not about a military solution at all. And we have to sit down and talk with Iran and Syria and all of those nations. Like Obama has stressed that several times, and even James Baker says you sit down and talk with your enemies, that's what you do. And we've heard John McCain over the past couple of weeks because of Bush's remarks at the Knesset in Israel for the 60th anniversary of the country regarding the appeasement and speaking, you know, with terrorists. Well, you know, Bush and McCain have both pushed for speaking with Hamas because they, and for speaking, pushing for, excuse me, a democratic Palestine. And then what happened is that they wanted to engage and speak with Hamas in order to push democracy for a Palestinian form of government. And so, you know, even, and we went in and spoke with Gaddafi in Libya, who is responsible for, you know, terrorism acts against the United States as well. And then, well, look what happened. You know, then he withdraws from that type of terrorist activity. We've even gone in and talked to Kim Jong-il in North Korea. And so, you know, that's what you do. Because if you really are serious about wanting to end terrorism and do something serious about that, then that's what you have to do, is you have to go and engage all of these people and sit down and discuss diplomatically with the people who you can speak with.
So would you favor trying to work ultimately to a nuclear-free zone in the Middle East? And would you favor re-engaging with the other nuclear powers around the world and beginning again to work toward disarmament?
Yeah, we have to look again at nuclear non-proliferation, because that's something that has to be on the table, and we have to be serious about that, because, you know, like Gorbachev said, it doesn't really matter if you know, he has 100 nuclear bombs and we only have one. It doesn't matter who strikes first. You know, nobody wins. And so we really have to get back to the table and be serious about nuclear non-proliferation. But we have to do that ourselves as well. We can't be going around the world telling people that they cannot have a nuclear weapon if we knowingly still have them. So there has to be more diplomatic talks, and we have to be willing to all sit down at the table and again discuss non-proliferation.
Yes, I think deeds speak louder than words for a lot of people. We are going to have to take a quick break, but we will be back. We are speaking with Democratic candidate for Congress from California's 24th District, from the Ventura, Santa Barbara area, Mary Pallant. You can check out her website at marypallant.com, and you can call in and join us when we get back from the break. Toll-free in the U.S. and Canada, 888-228-4494, and anywhere else in the world, 877-489-6350. Back in a few.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on Earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by After Downing Street.
More than 1 million children are forced into prostitution every year because of sex tourism. Morocco has become a favorite destination. Economic difficulties contribute to the alarming growth of this industry. SOS Morocco's mission is to let the world know that it's against the law, a human and moral crime, to travel to Morocco with the intent to engage in sexual activity with a child. Please visit SOSMorocco.org for more information and to support our endeavors.
This land is yours. Join us on the People Speak Radio Show every Tuesday and Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern for an hour of live interview and audience interaction with guests from the realms of entertainment, education, activism, spirituality, politics, and literature. Get involved and make a difference for the better. That's the People Speak every Tuesday and Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio Network.
Maybe with me.
And we are back. This is David Swanson at the People Speak Radio, and we are speaking with the Democratic candidate from, probably the Democratic candidate, one of three at the moment, from California's 24th District, Mary Pallant. Welcome back, Mary.
Thank you, David.
We continuing to have questions come in through the chat room from listeners, and Jackie in Nevada would like to know if you support repealing the Patriot Act, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Questioning your patriotism.
That has nothing to do with being patriotic or not, you know. And, in fact, I was against the Patriot Act when it first came out, and there was a lot of us who were very active here in the San Fernando Valley where I lived in 2001. And we were very outspoken about that. And, you know, it's just not something that we believed was necessary because – in order to keep our country free and to fight for and to restore our freedoms, it's not with taking away our rights and our freedoms. That's not how you strengthen democracy. And so the Patriot Act, there might be a few things in there that maybe the FBI or the CIA or law enforcement likes. There's no need that we need to have the whole complete Patriot Act. I just don't believe at all that that's something that's necessary in order to, you know, combat what we're trying to go after in this country. That's just not something that's necessary, and I'm against that, and I think that we should repeal that and then look at some of the areas that law enforcement might actually need or might be useful that they could actually utilize without stripping us of our constitutional rights. And the term patriot, too, is interesting because I've brought this up several times, is that, and I'd like to remind people that a true patriot is somebody who loves their country, not necessarily their government, and that our founding fathers looked at somebody being a patriot as, because the term comes from the word paternal, to look over. And so it is actually up to us to keep an eye and a watch on our government when they are doing something that is wrong or is not of and by the or for the people or in the best interest of the commonwealth of the people too. So a patriot dissents because that's what patriots do. And it's dissenting against the government, not the country. So,
well said. I wish it were said more often in Washington.
It's not about wearing a lapel pin. You know, when Barack Obama was asked, well, you know, he doesn't wear a lapel pin. And so I thought my first response was, well, Hillary doesn't wear one on her suit.
Yeah, it's it's a
and nobody questions her for not having a lapel flag pin. So.
It's a crazy non-issue.
Well, yeah, and it's crazy how we can get so easily distracted by issues that aren't even relevant to anything that has to do with what's best and most important for the people of this country too.
When we start repealing Bush-era legislation and we get the Patriot Act out of there, what about, say, the Military Commissions Act, which allows the president to name you an enemy combatant? And
yes, that has to go too, and especially when they suspended habeas corpus as well, which was just absolutely appalling. You know, as a Democrat and as a lover of America and everything that this country stands for, I just could not believe that they actually voted to suspend habeas corpus. And that's another reason that I signed up with what's the Responsible Plan, which is a plan that I think there's about 40 candidates now who have signed up, as well as some current House representatives, that is withdrawing from Iraq without delay. But then it takes a step further in working on to ensure that we don't have that kind of foreign policy debacle again, because that was one of the worst foreign policy debacles in the history of the United States, the invasion of Iraq. And so the Responsible Plan looks at ensuring diplomacy and political solutions, and it also looks at restoring habeas corpus any other rights that have been stripped away as well, because I heard, too, there was discussion a while back where Cheney and Condi Rice were in talks with suspending the Fourth Amendment for domestic military acts. And, you know, whatever that means, does that mean that Blackwater could just come knock on your door and invade your home without cause or warrant? And so it's very scary. So all of those rights have to be restored. And I'm hoping that when Barack Obama sits down, those are some of the first things that he's going to sit down with Congress and say, look, we have to restore everything that's been stripped away because this is the United States of America. And, you know, if we're talking about fighting terrorists, that's for security reasons. It's not for our freedoms. Those are two fundamentally separate issues. And so we have to really sit down, roll up our sleeves, and restore all of those rights that have been stripped away.
Well, the responsible plan, which people can go and read this lengthy document at responsibleplan.com, is certainly a cut above where we are now. But it's pretty vague and pretty hesitant, and it doesn't say anything in terms of action by Congress, as you have in this interview said that you would vote no to fund the continuation of the occupation. Many of the signers of this plan may or may not have that position. So I think it's worth reading, but I much prefer your simple comment that you're going to stop paying money.
That's part of what I am running on, and that's part of just what I believe needs to be done. But I like the responsible plan because what that does is it does take like-minded individuals and it puts us together and it gives us a place to build from. And so if we see that more of the people who have signed on say, yes, we have to stop the funding, then it makes it easier for other people who might be hesitant to not stop the funding, that we can say, look, you have our support. We're backing you. We're moving forward with this. And so it can help propel us in that direction.
Yes, indeed. I have to ask about the other country next to Iraq because, you know, today and in recent weeks and for the past many months, there have been these noises about the Bush administration intending to attack
Iran.
Saber-rattling,
yes.
And there have been, you know, noises from the Senate and the House, you know, please, Mr. President, don't do it. And there's, you know, there have been bills and so forth, but what would you do if you were sitting in Congress right now that you think would best help prevent an aggressive attack on Iran? I'm not talking about a defensive attack should Iran attack us, but an aggressive act of war by our nation against Iran.
Well, first of all, we have to go back almost 6 years and remind everybody what happened with the saber rattling of the buildup to going into Iraq. And it's very similar rhetoric that we hear. And so we have to be very cognizant of the past behavior of going into Iraq and how similar that is. And we know what a mistake that was. And second of all, we really have to sit down and engage Iran because Iran, after 9/11, they were very instrumental in helping us going into Afghanistan and finding some key al-Qaeda members who were actually behind the attacks on the Twin Towers. And they had been talking with some of our National Security Council advisors in helping to build and establish stronger relationships between Iran and the United States. And they were very concerned after 9/11 because they had thought that we were going to sever that relationship. And so they looked at 9/11 as helping us, and they were and continuing to build and strengthen those bridges that they had been working on. And, you know, the saber rattling from the Bush administration has pretty much, you know, obliterated that, all of that work and effort. And so it's really going to take somebody who is a diplomat and somebody like Barack Obama to be able to go in and sit down and calm that fire and get back to the table of initiating diplomacy and strengthening our relationships again.
Yeah.
Because,
and
you know, the majority of the Iranian people are very pro-West, and but the saber rattling and all of the name calling from the Bush administration, that only infuriates the leaders like Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, and the people of Iran are very frustrated with him because he didn't fulfill a lot of his promises, but he can hold on to those name callings against the evil empire, you know, the United States. And that's just bad for Iran, it's bad for the United States, and it's bad for anything that we would like to see done as far as you know, the peace process in the Middle East. So we really have to get back to the table with Iran, too.
Yeah, it's intended to antagonize him, and it supports him, just as the sanctions supported Saddam and the boycott supports Castro and so forth.
It only makes them stronger.
The other thing that you've already said, of course, is that you would support impeachment hearings now around Iraq, which I think might help to discourage similar action on Iran. Let's bring another caller in on the conversation. Basima from Michigan is on the line. Thanks for calling in, Basima.
Thank you, David. Hello, David, and thank you so much for hosting Jason last night, Jason Lemieux. Mary, it's been an honor talking to you. Good luck with your campaign.
Thank you.
My question to you is, in the beginning of the campaign process, the presidential campaign process, we as Americans all thought that this campaign, this election, was going to be about the war. It was about Iraq and nothing else. I don't find that to be true anymore. I believe that people, due to the economic strife, due to the oil prices, due to all of the events that have befallen our nation, absolutely has steered the American eye away from the war. And are we going to end up with a war that's fought with nobody looking at it, nobody seeing it, nobody witnessing it, due to all the problems that we have internally here in the United States?
Well, you know, that's an excellent question. And if you look back, again, tying the Iraq occupation into what's going on here with the economy, and then you mentioned the cost of gas, I mean, here in California, we're paying $3.99 a gallon, and that's for just the, you know, regular unleaded gasoline. And if you look at what's happened, so the buildup of our debt because of the Bush administration policies, and then the Iraq occupation, and then the decline of our dollar, what has happened is that people then turn to commodities, and so then what they do is they invest in commodities. So when they invest in oil, that brings the cost of the oil up and the price up. And also, too, going into Iraq has diminished the supply of oil, so when you diminish a supply, that also brings up the cost. And so we're seeing all of these factors tied into this one aspect, which is the Iraq occupation, which is why it's imperative for us to sit down and say, you know what, we have to get out. It's unsustainable, and it's an invasion of our treasury as much as it's an invasion of the sovereign nation that did not attack us or had nothing to do with 9/11. So, you know, hopefully I'm looking at we're going to have a lot of policies initiated to strengthen our dollar, to look at environmental issues as far as clean energy policy and subsidizing alternative and clean energy rather than subsidizing the oil companies, because we have to get away from not only our dependence on foreign oil, which is about 60% of the oil that we use in this nation, but our dependence on oil. And we have to shift toward green technologies and solar and wind and all of those issues as well. And then that, in turn, if we shift to a green policy and creating green-collar jobs, then that'll help with the economy as well, because then that'll create about two to three million jobs here in the United States.
Yeah, in fact, Mary, a number of studies I've seen suggest that you create a lot more jobs in the United States by investing in infrastructure and education and so forth here than
yes.
you do by investing in military.
Yes. Well, because if you look at investing in the military, your investment has a high rate of return in the upfront, because what do? You build a bomb. What happens when you build a bomb? You want to use that bomb. You blow it up, you have to build another one. But if you reinvest in infrastructure, something to the effects that Franklin Roosevelt did, investing in infrastructure, well, when you build a bridge, that has long-term use. When you build a highway, that has long-term use. When you build a school, that has long-term use. And so all of that is going to have a much better return on the investment, not to mention the number of jobs that you're going to be creating to increase and restore the infrastructure that's crumbling now in the United States.
Right, and I'm glad that you got around to energy and the environment, because I had said we'd get to the four topics on your website, and I and
yes.
I failed dramatically to get to two of them. The other one that we haven't spoken
about.
Well,
you see how everything's tied together.
it is, but we haven't really focused on healthcare, so we don't have a great many minutes left. But for example,
well,
John Conyers.
Easy.
John Conyers' bill for a single-payer system,
mm-hmm.
is that something you'd sign on to?
Yes, I would, because that would get us in the direction that's Medicare for all, is what he's looking at. My plan is about single-payer health care, which is publicly funded and privately run, which is similar to the Medicare for all. We can implement a single-payer system in this country. We spend the money now. It's just a matter of making that decision of moving that direction. And again, the reason that I always say publicly funded and privately run is because what would happen is we would just eliminate the middleman, which is the insurance companies. The government would pay the insurance premium, is how you can view it. You would still go to your own doctor, your own hospital. And we really have to get back to community-run hospitals and not these for-profit systems, because everybody is hurting. Hospitals are losing money. People are not getting the care they need. And for us to be, you know, one of the most wealthy nations in the world, not to have some type of healthcare system for our citizens, it's just wrong. And so we really need to sit down, and that's one of the issues that we really have to work on, and that single-payer, publicly funded, privately run healthcare for every man, woman, and child, because I firmly believe that it should be a right, not a privilege, to have healthcare in this country.
Well, I'm sure you could do a new bill, and the bills could be changed and improved on, but John Conyers' bill, as an example, H.R. 676, mm-hmm. has had a ton of co-sponsors year after
yes.
year after year reintroduced, and yet I interviewed on this program progressive candidates for Congress who in theory support what you're saying, but tell me that, well, what they would wait till they got into office, they would see what plan the new president proposed, and they would back that. And so I'm wondering, as a Congress member, would you really push for a plan that you thought made the most sense, or would you sit back and wait and see what the new president said?
No, you know, I'm the type of person that if I have something on my mind, I go for it, and that's another reason why I'm running for Congress, is because I saw a need and I go after it, and a lot of the time that I've spent over the last several years volunteering and all the various activities that I've done, it's because I see something that needs to be done and I just figure out a way to do it. And that's how I see the healthcare system, is that it needs to be fixed, and I would not sit back and wait for somebody else. I would be a big advocate, a strong voice for single payer, publicly funded, privately run healthcare system.
Glad to hear it. Thrilled to hear it. We've been talking about the current Congress and how it's not exactly doing what we thought we elected it to do in 2006, and not
mm-hmm.
exactly doing what public opinion calls for on Iraq, on impeachment, on so many issues. What's your take on the leadership of Speaker Nancy Pelosi? What sort of a job has she done in your mind?
Well, you know, I think with what she's had to work with, I think she's done a very commendable job. And I think what we have to look at too is that Democrats, and in fact, that they're starting to learn this, but they're learning it slowly. And that is, over the past several years, what has happened is that the neocons have defined what it means to be a Democrat or a liberal or a progressive Democrat. And what has happened with the Democrats is that rather than us standing up and defining who we are, we have been running after them, defending our positions, rather than taking a firm stance on this is what it means to be a Democrat, and this is what we stand for. And so we have to really get back to doing that. We have to say, you know what, we're going to stand up for our progressive Democratic values, our ideals, and our issues. This is what they are. This is what they stand for. And this is how it's going to better America. And so I think that if we all see that we have strong voices and people supporting us, and then the stronger that majority and the larger that majority gets, I think then it'll be easier to shift a lot of the policy that we've been critical of, because I've even been critical too. I thought, you know, we're having hearings with steroids in baseball, and we're talking about steroids when they were using them when it wasn't even illegal in baseball to use them, and we don't have time to hold hearings on impeachment. It just didn't
right.
make sense. You know, so hopefully if we get more people like me in Congress, and I can go in and I can back Barbara Lee and Lynn Woosley and Maxine Waters and Dennis Kucinich and all of the other very strong progressive voices in Congress, then I think that that'll help shift the fundamental direction that we have to go. And the thing that Democrats, too, and this is what I talk about a lot, too, is that Democrats are going to win when Democrats run as Democrats. And when they stand up for, you know, American values and ideals, which are fundamentally democratic values and ideals. And when we learn how to do that, then we're going to continually win. Because if you look at the majority of the country, the majority of the country really stands for and embraces democratic principles and values. And we just have to get better at describing and defining, because a lot of times, too, we take it for granted. And we just can't take it for granted anymore.
I agree, and I look forward to seeing your name on the ballot. I hope that Senator Obama picks a real Democrat as a running mate.
Yes.
And I hope that we see a real contest of visions for this country in November. Mary Pallant, candidate for Congress from California's 24th District. The website is MaryPallant.com. MaryPallant.com. People can go there and volunteer, go there and contribute money. What should people know who want to get involved, Mary?
Yeah, they can go to the website. They can get contact information. I'd be happy to follow up on any other issues if somebody wasn't able to discuss that with me today, contribute money, because that's always important until we get, like I said, clean money campaign financing. And if there's anybody that's in the local surrounding areas, like Henry Waxman borders my district, Lois Capps, and those are really strong Democratic districts. And so anybody in those areas can come in and help me in this district, because we can really have a good shot of turning this district blue.
Excellent idea. Mary, thanks so much for being on the program.
Thank you, David. Thank you for having me.
And this has been the People Speak Radio. We are, as always, at thepeoplespeakradio.net. Next Tuesday, our guest will be a returning guest, Tracy Barker, who's been on the program, who is a victim of rape in Iraq while serving as a contract employee for KBR, and is still seeking justice, and she will be back with an update. And next Wednesday, I'll be speaking with Helena Coban, who is a peace activist and author. She writes for the Christian Science Monitor. She works for the Friends Committee on National Legislation. That's Friends as in Quakers. And she has an excellent new book called Re-Engage, about foreign policy possibilities in the post-Bush era. Short book. I highly recommend getting it and reading it before next Wednesday, Re-Engage by Helena Coban. This is David Swanson at the People Speak Radio. We live and breathe and move with your support. Give your money to Mary Pallant, and then give some to thepeoplespeakradio.net to keep this program running. Speak with you again next time.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the city wall, by the relief of death, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry. And I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, the redwood forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone. And we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.